Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the I Get Bucket podcast. My name is Simon, your host as always, and we are almost at the tipping point end of the season 2026 fantasy basketball. Everything's going down now. There's a week to go in our two-week championship. We've had our seeding teams, both one and two, kind of crash out in two sets, and we've had kind of the fantasy underdog dream run from Dobes kind of coming through with winning 10. But at the moment, my team looking all right, hopefully going to clinch out and finish strong. There's a little bit of a buffer there, but not wanting to count anything until it happens. This is not what we want to focus on the podcast. Last time, what happened is I waited way too long to get some of the team summaries out. So while I've got a chance, we're jumping in. We're going to talk about a couple of teams who finished up their season about a month ago now at the bottom two. But it'd be remiss not to kind of start and lead the podcast with an update. Know that once, you know, teams get out, and I'm speaking to Adam about not being able to potentially access the website and get the scores to check in and see how playoffs are going, but we'll probably have a little bit more in the chat soon, especially as it kind of gets to the end and we start to see a result, and I'm hoping it's going to be a good one for me to celebrate as well. But very mindful and wanting to kind of celebrate everything that kind of happened in the season, getting there and all the storylines, and it's been a weird one, I think, across the board, with whether it's the tanking issues or injuries, or, you know, this is the first season we've done this free agency bidding thing, and how that's kind of impacted some changes and how people have managed their teams, and you know, having a new coach kind of come in and really dominate from the regular season tip off to the end, and how that's kind of gone in playoffs, and some of the thoughts around the importance of the buys and everything. I think it's a real fun one to kind of deep dive in, and yeah, hopefully we'll get to that point where we can kind of talk about that and celebrate the winner and do all the things that we love to. But because there's 5 days to go with the championship, we won't get ahead of ourselves too much. But wanting to use the time well, refresh everyone's brains, get your kind of tongues wagging on some kooky information, and get into kickstart, I guess, the reviews of teams for fantasy season 2026. So we've usually gone kind of top to bottom because I've started with the winner, but we're going to go bottom up at least to start. I might chip around because I'll do a podcast after the championship finishes, but I've kind of put my mind to it and thought about, you know, how do we make these a little bit more structured or exciting, and it's still going to be me kind of going off the top because I don't have time to prep too much of it all, but I thought it might be fun to have a little bit more of a structure around the reviews. So I'm going to go through teams one by one. I'll do both Jesse and Walshy today, two that finished on the bottom, but an overview of, you know, the team, the record, a summary of the season, as always, you know, a draft, you know, review and notes on where you went right, where you went wrong, things that kind of stood out. But, you know, as always, kind of which of the injuries kind of really impacted your season? What was your best pick? What was your worst? What are the surprises in there? But then I want to, you know, talk about, did you engage in any trades? How'd they pan out? How's your free agency? And maybe the key season moments. What went right? What went wrong? And a bit of homework I've got, especially for these two teams, about what your focus should be next season in your preseason work. So we'll start off kicking the reviews with bottom. So we've had Team Jesse, Team White Flag, record of 3-15, finishing off the season, losing 8 in a row, unfortunately getting the sacco for this season. So it's going to be Jesse's first sacco in the keg era, with the punishment coming on draft day. Forgive me, I'm not sure if he's had the sacco before. My mind would say yes, but it's been, you know, not too far removed from when Jesse, you know, had quite a bit of success, strung a couple of premierships together, champions, got his name on the trophy twice. So I think during that patch, you know, he was quite strong and not down the bottom. So we'll go back and see if he's ever got it before, but he 100% hasn't done it in the sacco era. Last week, and really the last 2 weeks, it felt like it was very improbable that he was going to fall all the way down, but he managed to do it off, I guess, his unsuccessful attempts to win, but more the success of Walshy in the last 2 weeks coming up to get across from him. So big results there for the Sacco, made the bottom of the ladder interesting as well. But yeah, not a greatest season for Jesse. Some of it his fault, some of it not. But let's go through all the draft, because the one I had the top, and very interesting enough, he gets pick 10. It's funny, like me, when I reflect, and a few of us do the footy as well, we've been had the reverse of the basketball draft for the footy this year. So in basketball, I drafted one, he drafted 10 a couple of months ago, and we did footy. It was the reverse. He had one, I had 10. It's not my favorite drafting at the tippy top. I can say in basketball, there's a lot more benefits of drafting first to get Jokic. But what are the benefits of going 10? I thought he did the right thing at the time in going Sabonis. I know there was conversations across, and someone mentioning, well, at 6, where do you go after these 5? Do you actually go Sabonis? And I'm like, oh, I'm not sure about that. But, you know, that's round about the mark. Like, pretty reliable guy, you know, who averaged, I think, the 32 or something the year before, maybe even a couple more. And him just being kind of that reliable guy that you're happy to go there. So I think when he was on the board at 10, I was very happy for him to go there. Unfortunately, this is, you know, where the injuries kind of came in. If you put a guess at how many games he played this year, I'm sure your guess would be quite low. 19 games was the final kind of record for him. Shut down, you know, well and truly now, for the Kings, who have shut down basically the majority of their roster who are any good at basketball. There's a few interesting kind of players there at the moment, but they're not trying to win. They sucked unintentionally for most of the first half of the year. But Sabonis, 19 games. He had played 70 the year before, but then 82 and 79 in those other two seasons before that. So he's been relatively healthy. He's not someone that you think, you know, you'd take a bet against in terms of health, but it's just been a really unfortunate one for him to kind of come down. And when he was playing, you know, it wasn't that first round level. So he's an average of 26.4, which, you know, I think that puts him around that kind of 40th best average in the league around about. So, yeah, we'll go through and I'll talk about exactly where averages are for some players that I've looked up. But interesting enough, and it's kind of accurate from year to year, there's small kind of discrepancies. But we do say, you know, the top 50 players usually are averaging around 25 and up. And then that 50 to 100 mark are around 20 to 25. That usually is how where it sits. And I looked it up before, and it's basically, as you know, the day I'm recording now, pretty much bang on. 24.8 is the average for our 50th best player. And I think it was 20.3 is the average for our 100th best player. And there's a lot of players in that who haven't played as many games. So that's why the total points are very interesting for us to kind of break down. Obviously, Sabonis is in that one who just hasn't played. But, you know, obviously your Anthony Davis, your Trae Young, a few other players. Walker Kessler, you know, only played 10 games or so. All in that kind of bracket for average. But, yeah, we go into points of view. The biggest thing is, you know, I thought Sabonis was a fine pick here, and very unlucky, I think, for Jesse just to not be able to get the worth there. And it really kind of comes down to hurt when you're picking, you know, 10 and you're missing out on some of that kind of huge ones, because it puts real pressure on pick 11, and then the fact that you don't really get to pick until 30 and 31. So there's an overall conversation, I think, and I spoke with MJ briefly about the snake turn, and I know some fantasy leagues will kind of reverse the turn. So basically, I think if you were a pick 10, instead of getting a 30 to 31, I think you come down and maybe go 30, 31 and 32. There's a way to do it a little bit differently, but it's a big pain when you lose Sabonis, who just doesn't really play. And Karl Anthony Towns was the other one off the back of him having an amazing season, huge addition to Jesse's team the year previous that everyone kind of slagged off when he picked him at 12, I think, and he was amazing. I think he averaged about 34 the year previous. I think I had him about 7 or 8 on my big board from memory. So the fact that he went 11 here, I was super comfortable with it. He averages 29.2, so that's very much, you know, in the wheelhouse of, you know, that upper echelon player. It's not that kind of 30 mark that you'd be hoping. He obviously slipped. It's not the season you'd be hoping for 11, but, you know, good enough, and he plays enough that it's not a catastrophe. I think I have down here, so he's about 20th in average for a pick 11. It's not catastrophic, but the fact that Sabonis, you know, wasn't able to play and be there, the fact that you've got, you know, one guy in your top 20 really kind of hurts. The fact that I think Donovan Mitchell, who's his next pick, was actually better than Karl-Anthony Towns, kind of picks up the slack. So it's really good that he nailed that pick at pick 30. Donovan Mitchell, who'd been consistently like an end of second round guy now. You know, Evan Mobley gets drafted before him. I can't remember if that happened last year, but the shift, I think, in fantasy rankings for Cavs has kind of gone the way of kind of Mobley there. And, you know, James Harden, if you count him now, you know, went at 17. So he's really the third Cav that's been drafted technically, I guess, now in the lens of the season. But he's, you know, a guy that's averaged 30. Let's see, James Harden. He's averaging more than Harden. Obviously, he's got half a season at the Clippers. But, you know, Donovan Mitchell's their guy. I think that was a really smart pick for him to go there. Yeah, average of 32 at the end. Someone that, you know, out of the guys that went in round three, you know, you've drafted him after a Vucevic and a Holmgren and a LeBron and a Curry and a Brunson. You know, he's average in total. He's just been better than all these guys. Hasn't really missed through injury. He's been an absolute star here, because we can look at his total here and see where he is there. And he's 12th in total. So, yeah, some guy that, you know, is really kind of paid off. Donovan Mitchell's been an amazing pick and one of his best, really, that we'll go into. But Cooper Flagg is the one that was really interesting kind of next. I said it at the time, I thought it was fine. I thought, you know, okay, maybe it's a touch early, but, you know, we were all pretty high on the stocks. And I think I said at the time, you know, these guys that have come in, you know, with this expectation, credentialed kind of first round generational player dudes, a la, you know, your Paolo to extent, but Wemby, even if you're going all the way back to kind of Anthony Davis, some of these guys, it's like, well, who's going to risk going too early on them, because we haven't seen an NBA game. And consistently, it seemed that these guys get drafted later than what they've performed over the course of a season if they're healthy. And Cooper Flagg, I was very happy to kind of lean into that and say, yeah, well, how early is too early? I think this was around the mark of, I think I had him around that 40. So to say, you know, this was his first last pick at 31 until 50, and he really wanted Cooper Flagg, so let's go here. No problem with it. You know, he had a really kind of, really slow, but he did like slow start, and that's to be expected. Rookie that's been thrown into like a point guard role at Dallas and without too much kind of veteran leadership. And, you know, Kyrie Irving's out. Anthony Davis was a whole saga there before he got traded. So I think, you know, it took him a bit, but he really fell into it there. And he's kind of come out with a total. What's that? I'm trying to look at it. It's about 36 overall, which is, you know, pretty fun, I think, for someone who, you know, hasn't played an NBA game and you take him at 31. He's not the problem with this team. Jesse had a lot of issues, I think, in holes and not being able to put up big scores and obviously only getting the 3 wins for the season. But Cooper Flagg wasn't the problem there. I thought that was a fine pick. It'll be interesting to see where he goes next year, because like all these guys, I say, you know, well, it's their first year. We'll see who like puts the stake in and saying, well, here's the bar of where I think he is before he even plays and where is it going to go. And the arrow is pointing up at how far up for Cooper Flagg next season. We've seen the Wemby one where he went from 31. It was around the same mark. It's funny. I think like Paolo, Wemby, and Cooper, because they're the ones that I remember, all have gone, I think, late round three, early round four in their first season. Maybe Wemby is like higher around three, but then where do they go next season? And Wemby went at 2. before going at 3 this year. So it'll be interesting where Cooper goes next season. I'd be projecting someone's going to really look at him quite high. So yeah, no worries with that one. You kind of go through and the two picks next are probably the issues. So Jalen Green, second year in a row that he's got him, second time he's gone probably quite high on him. I thought he was interesting because he was like, traded to Phoenix, and his issues were quite visible. And, you know, I've been, and I haven't sold my stock just yet, you know, a big Jalen Green kind of bandwagon guy. But even I, at the end of the Houston run, was a little bit worried about, you know, his scoring and his finishing at the rim. And shooting had been a problem, but I was big on, you know, when I found my first championship in this run of, you know, the shooting is going to come. Like, I like the form. I like the, it's more about the shot selection and things like that. And it did come good. And I think he had like a month stretch where he was shooting like 43% from three. And you're like, this is the template. This is where it goes. I kind of like that, you know, in Phoenix, you know, he's sharing a backcourt with Booker, but okay, I think he's going to get an allowance to lean more into his kind of athletic, you know, run, finish at the rim kind of scoring game. We just really didn't get to see it because of injury, and it's unfortunate because he played 82 games in like the last two seasons before that. Only played 26 games so far. He did come in the season injured, and it was a lingering thing that happened again, and I think it happened for the second time after he'd been drafted. But I think that was my problem when he did it. It was like, oh, you've picked him at pick, you know, 50 here. And that's, we knew he had like kind of this injury thing. So I think I had him on my board, you know, around that kind of 70 mark as an interesting flyer, but knowing he's injured. And the issue is, you know, he came back and hurt himself again. And that one game that he came back, he actually looked amazing. I think he had like a 30 in fantasy on 20 minutes played. His average so far is a 17.5 on the 26 games. So it's not super exciting, but you can see on his docket, he's starting to kind of like tick up, and his average is definitely kind of trending in the right way. So again, an interesting one for next year, but in terms of, you know, this season, he probably went early on it, and then it kind of ended in the most catastrophic way it could. A shame, because, you know, I text Jesse, I really love Jalen Green. He was playing for Phoenix, so obviously Jesse was invested, I think, in seeing him do well, and it just didn't happen. So it just, when you pick someone that early and they're just a zero factor, you've got two players out of your first five now, really, who are just kind of were zeros for the season, and it's hard to come back for that. And your next pick at 51, start around six, Coby White. Again, it was early at the time. I think we all kind of thought it was early. I like what Coby White is for a team. The back end of the Bulls season was really, really fun. I bought his jersey, wore it on draft day because he was huge for me in the finals. Like, absolutely game changer. You know, the main reason that I won on that last day, putting up the 41, I think he did in fantasy. So All arrows were like, you know, Coby White's here, Coby White's good. But, you know, there was the thing around his extension and the Bulls, and it was just a little bit too stinky for you to rely on a Coby White, you know, this early in the draft, especially when guys just after, you know, Austin Reeves gets a pick after. Austin Reeves is a lot better than I think a few people thought, but, you know, your Larry Markkanen, Jamal Murray, Tyler Hero, Michael Porter Jr., Kawhi Leonard, even down to Denny Avdija, who I picked. These were all guys that, you know, I had higher on the board that, you know, probably should have been picked before Coby. He was injured. He got traded. Not a really nice season. And as much as it's hard, and I think now this season was more evident than ever, and maybe this will be a theme of the podcast that we talk about, but situation and where you think the teams are going and how you think things are going to plan out factored in more than I think it ever has before. And whether you're thinking, you know, Coby White's an extra and what are the Bulls doing and stuff, it's, I mean, that should factor in at least a little bit now. You know, one of the reasons I only mention him because he's on the thing here now that I just mentioned for round six was Michael Porter Jr. Like, the whole time through the season, I'm like, I think he gets picked here and he scores big, but what is it going to look like at before, you know, just after the trade deadline, and then if he's not moved, like, you know, if the Nets are in the tank? That was an obvious one that stood out, and I think, unfortunately, there's been, you know, tens of players that have kind of been painted with this worry and realistic thing that's kind of happened before our eyes of just not playing or being hurt or held out or shut down for the season. And you had this thought for a few players, and now it's happened to all these ones. Some of them you can't control. you know, Coby White was a little bit like, oh, I don't know how high I want to pick him, just because some of the things that were going on. And you listen to podcasts, you're like, well, an easy kind of move to kind of clear space and get something, and knowing that Coby White was, again, as well as Jalen Green, hurt to start the season, and they were starting well, where is his role in there? Do they have an in excess of them? And of course, Bulls being Bulls, don't just fucking trade Coby White. They get rid of Dosunmu as well. And you're like, well, wasn't the point of having one or the other? Like, unless I get rid of both. it's hard to pinpoint, you know, Bulls decision making, but it's just interesting. I think that's going to be a trend on the podcast reviews a little bit on, and where I saw some of my success getting into the point now of getting guys who I think are going to be there at the right time. And I think I made a huge mistake that we'll talk about with Mobley, who's killing it at the moment, with the Cavs needing to win games and wanting to be there, and over a guy who, you know, got shut down two games into his tenure for my team. But, that's for another podcast. Going through for Jesse, I think he nails like the pick next in Mathurin, in the concept of I want guys around this time who I think are making the jump from pretty solid fantasy player to, okay, here we go, are you a top 50 guy? And Mathurin, I think, was in that kind of corner. The Indiana Pacers had real question marks of these guys are going to step up, similar to the Boston Celtics of, all right, let's throw kind of darts at guys who I think in the vacuum and void of, you know, your big stars, whether it's Halliburton or Tatum, but, you know, down the line at the Pacers, who's going to step up? Mathurin was that guy. It's just we didn't get the sample of it. You know, he was injured. Missed huge chunks of the season. I think he was averaging 30-ish when he was injured for that first end, because he played two games and had like a 36 and a 31. So we didn't get to see it. You know, he comes back, he looks okay, gets traded. He's averaging a 20.4 now. So, you know, as I said, for a guy that you got at 70, that's around the 100 mark. So in the end, it becomes a you know, a pick that hurts you, especially when you've got, you know, other guys around that played a little bit better. You know, RJ Barrett after, you know, Julius Randle gets picked after, Emmanuel Quickly, the guy that I got. All guys who outperform and play and aren't injured. But I thought it was a smart pick at the time, and I still think it's more bad luck than bad drafting. I think that was good. And another one that I thought was good drafting was Josh Hart. You know, I think we all expected him to be worse than he was last season. The average of like 26 last year slipped down to 21.7. There was talk about, you know, him coming off the bench for the Mitch Robb Cat big lineup. They didn't, you know, stick with that for much longer at all. But even in the thought process of that happens, I'm like, well, I don't care too much as long as he's finishing games. And, you know, his per 36 numbers are always going to be very strong. He slipped down a little bit, but I think everyone knew that was going to happen. But it's still, you know, someone that I rate, you know, picking at pick 71. So his average, you know, is slightly more, but, you know, the total points probably reflects that. I think, you know, this pick was fine where he went there. You know, John Collins next hurts you. Stephen Castle was a huge kind of win for you next. You know, 23.3 really shakes off that kind of sophomore lump. You know, everyone's like, oh, it was a weak rookie class, rookie of the year, I'm not sure. There was a lot of talk about Castle just like not being good. So I think to buck the trend and get on it early and then really be redeemed by all this talk about how good Stephen Castle is, his, you know, two-way player ability and all this stuff. I think you were early on that. I think that's a huge, huge pick. One of, you know, his top few that he's taken. Jalen Suggs, I have no, remorse or don't feel any empathy towards Jesse picking him here, because I said at the time, like, you just can't trust Jalen Suggs. I'm not going to trust Jalen Suggs. He's played like 15 of his last, you know, like 20 games or something like that, which is outrageous for him. But when you needed him, he's just not there. Average of 19.2 is fine, but I just don't know if he's playing game to next. I don't know where you want to draft him next year, but good luck. Dylan Harper. Yeah, it just doesn't work in a fantasy lane. You know, everyone still has huge hypes on where he's going to go. I'll be interested to see his draft position next year, but it's just a miss. He averages 15.6. You know, you see the glimpses of it that he become like he's not a guy that you really want to drop, but you know that you invested him at this point and he stays with you all season and gets a 15.6 hurts. It doesn't add to your season, unfortunately. But you know, did it right at the back end. I think his last three picks are really quite solid. The Westbrook one's, you know, a giant. He averages a 20.6 for someone you picked at 130. Boom, yeah. Westbrook can still play. There it is. Still do fantasy one. Colin Marley-Boyles, on any other team, I think he's dropped, but you kind of stick with him. Hurt you early, but kind of pays off because he was quite good for, you know, a few stretches. Injured, unfortunately, for a percentage of it too. But, you know, I think that's fine as well. I think, you know, three rookies so far, you know, it was a big rookie class and it was a big focus point because, you know, I went hard on a few as well. You know, Colin Marley-Boyles, one pick before Con Knipl, who, you know, goes an average of 22 and is amazing pick for Loogies Boogies. But, I don't really have a problem with that. It's just he probably hurt you early. And then Nemais Queta, if I'm saying that right. One of the better picks of the whole draft. The only really pick in the last round, unless you count Tatum. So two Celtics are really the two drafted in the last round that have stuck on people's teams. And Queta averages a 20.1, so just outside the top 100 in average, but probably higher in total if I went to look at it because of what he's done with the season. Terrific draft pick for Jesse. So I think overall you can see when we go through the issues, some of them self-inflicted, some of them outside of your control with injury. I think his best pick, you know, is through the three of, I think he's done awesome with Donovan Mitchell, and then the Castle and Quetzal are the other two that really stand out. The worst picks are probably Jalen Green and Kobe White because they're so early. Those two just like really, really hurt you. I think there's, you know, circumstances with the Jalen Green one that kind of really derails it. The reason why I still have it in is because we knew he was kind of injured to begin. So I think, you know, writing was on the wall to not go too early with it. And I think he's gone earlier than most. And Kobe White, for the reasons all I said, I think is where it stands out as going wrong. So they're the kind of issues with the team. But, you know, the surprise of the season, and I tiptoed on it, was I had to be, I think, Russell Westbrook. I think I'd write him off. I think on my big board I had him outside of draft territory. I had him at that kind of 160 mark just as respect. You know, like he is a guy that, you know, you can't completely take off your board, but, you know, he was playing minimum contract, not sure where it kind of goes. The idea of, okay, well, if things don't go right, it's easy to blame Westbrook if he's playing any sort of minutes and getting me out. But it felt quite quickly, I think, that the Kings were such a schmozzle, and above all, like there was some sort of stability at least with Westbrook and what he was doing, at least a baseline of like competitivity and like reliability. So the fact that he, you know, come in, I don't know how many triple doubles he got this year, but it was at least two, maybe. I think like it was there. I'm looking at Docket and there was two in his last kind of 10 games that he's played. So maybe it was a lot more. It was like 10. So he still got it. In the fact that if he's on the court getting minutes, he can put up numbers, and that's what happened. So, great pick by him, and a surprise for his season. Free agency, you know, Jesse's never been one with the free agency. The two that stand out that he picked early in for the season were Colin Sexton, you know, who got traded throughout, but Jesse held on to, and Duncan Robinson, who he picked up, I think, early in the piece for what he was doing. So, you know, I think those are the two that he went in that had a big part of his team, and they're both meh. You know, Duncan Robinson had his moments, but I think it was like in and out. I remember Caris LeVert, I think, was the other one he had because he kind of was either Caris or Duncan Robinson going off. So, you know, free agency, again, he hasn't really added to his team too much. You know, area, as always, looking to do better. He used 8 out of his 25 picks. And yeah, so I think the key season moment for him is losing that 8 in a row. And I think, you know, dropping with the one to Walshy, potentially it was, where it really gave him that edge. And the homework of preseason has to be looking at the free agency more. I think he had fun with the budget a couple of times, but had money to spare if we keep that system going in. I think just being a little bit more fun and filling the gaps has to be the focus. So that was a really neat half an hour ticking over now. So that's the format now, half an hour a team. And we can move on to Walshy's team next too. Team Walshy, Chet Happens, a record of 4 wins, 14 losses for him going through. So I guess the background, it was interesting when I reviewed the team. I thought it was okay. I really didn't have huge things to say about like issues with a lot of the players. I thought it was going to be really competitive, and it just didn't eventuate. Some things I got wrong with my read that, you know, obviously he got wrong as well. Some things, again, were injuries and kind of out of control. But I think similarly to Jesse, like when things were going off, you see other coaches like, you know, steer into the skid or at least kind of, okay, well, where I can kind of patch things together. And I think while she was, you know, one hand off the wheel, really watching the kind of car spin out and throwing his hands up, going, well, I don't know what to do here. Whether it was like looking to trade a Trae Young or someone when he was hurt early, or the Kuminga one was the big one that just he just couldn't be sitting on your team kind of not playing. The fact that, you know, he was just a coach's decision for such a long period of time and he's not injured, you weren't able to have him on the IR. So just copping zeros when your team was already kind of hurt. I think there was this time where you had a full IR and maybe like two or three other guys hurt, not playing as well as Kuminga. It was just you're giving up wins. And we saw at the end, like, okay, finally we've got 15 players playing, really competitive there. So I think there was things that needed to be addressed early because it just got out of control. But if you go through the draft, Şengün at pick 7, I said it was early. I thought it was early. Fine. Completely fine in the end. He averages, I think, here we go, a 30.4. So, you know, like right up in the top 15 or so. Yeah, so I think it's just after Donovan Mitchell there at 15th. I think it is in average. So, yeah, I mean, if you pick him at 7 and he's in the top 20, with what we've seen kind of go on and guys coming around and, you know, Anthony Davis picked before, Amen Thompson 2 after Sabonis, like there's players that have gone a lot like wrong, and Şengün has gone fine. He had a little bit of a patch in the middle of the season, but, you know, not that he's in grand final, but if he was his last 4 games, he has a 57 and a 56. That's how well he's going to be playing in fantasy-wise. And I've been watching a bit of Houston, and that's because, you know, of Reed Shepard and Jabari Smith on my team. But, you know, the Şengün thing's kind of ugly a lot of the time, and that's probably where they've got issues with offense when it's just kind of dumping it to him when it clogs up at the end. But they go through these patches where, you know, they're moving the ball and kind of it's less, you know, more free-flowing ones, and he picks his spots really well, I think, Şengün. And the three-point has been a weapon at times when it's going. Sometimes it's abandoned him. But, you know, I think the thing you know with Şengün is, like, even when it does clog up, like, it's like, well, he's at least going to try and get his. But when it's free-throwing, when he can get to the basket, he's been really, really nice with the touch. Flying down the lane in a few games lately, kind of catching, you know, drop passes and getting open by Durant, pulling a double team in. And he's done really well, I think, to really live up to, I guess it was a little bit of preseason. Is that why he went 7? But anything, like, Şengün wasn't the problem. He's been quite well. Trae Young, you know, a huge part of the problem. Some of it's injury, some of it's not. The whole Atlanta Hawks issue, obviously they were kind of really ready to get rid of him. I was fine with the draft pick at the time, I think, and I've been fine with Trae Young in early round 2 thing for a few years based on the fact that the usage is so high, the pick and roll stuff meant that, you know, he was, I think, led the league in assists the year before. Les Trae Young didn't mean bad things in terms of fantasy, was my thought at the time, in terms of, you know, you've got Jalen Johnson, my boy, and a few other guys like coming in, Nikhil Alexander Walker, like, but I'm still like happy with, like, if you have to pick, you know, guys that are left on the board, like, I think Trae Young was pretty safe. I think maybe there was the wrong read there from both Walsh and I because of the way things panned out. And that was a fantasy view. It wasn't a view of Trae Young as a player, but I didn't think it would be as bad as it was. You know, it was a Nets player. It was either Clowney or someone else who pushes a player into Trae Young's knee in game, you know, 6-7, whatever it was. And then, you know, he partially tore his MCL. Maybe he's out for a couple months. And it just kind of really puts things off. And then not to say, you know, how hurt he is now, if he could be playing or not. I mean, I think we can bet that if he could play, he probably is playing if he's not traded. But because he's the Wizards, he's not there. And it just, you know, completely becomes a zero for him. So like Jesse, you know, to get a zero from one of the guys that you've picked, you know, in your first two rounds just kind of helps derail it all. So that's a rough one. I'm not sure where he goes next year. I would say outside of round two. But, you know, someone will talk themselves into a fantasy view of Trae Young at the Wizards, and I wouldn't blame them, I think, at least in some part. So, but for this year, it couldn't have gone worse for Trae Young. Next, he picks Bam, and Bam's a solid pick. You know, he's not pretty an unsexy pick. He feels interesting now. You have like almost a footnote with Bam just because of that 83 point game. But I mean, you take that one out of it, you know, it's a solid season for a player that you've picked in round three. And this has been the thing about Bam is the last couple of seasons has felt less sexy, and Miami have had kind of issues middling around that kind of play-in thing, but he's just kind of pumped out his points again. You know, Spoelstra loves him. The sharing or kind of balance of him and Khalil Ware has been interesting, but it's never been at the sacrifice of Bam. Like, he's obviously the pecking order. He's going to get his minutes. He's going to get his rebounds. And at times he'll get all of the points, but, you know, an average of 20 points for the season and 10 exactly. So he's basically right on the line of a 2010 guy. And I think to get a 2010 guy that plays it here is a huge win. So he's done fine there. You know, the issues of injuries pop up again for Franz Wagner. Only plays 28 games for the season so far. Don't know when he's coming back. There's a couple of seasons in a row, I think, maybe he's picked him with the thought that he's going to break out. An average of 25 in the games that he plays, putting, you know, around about that's okay, Mark. You know, you want him to be a little bit higher still in around four. You know, guys like Scotty Barnes who go two picks after averaging a 28.5. You know, Trey Murphy, five picks later, is averaging similar, but, you know, on the court, obviously, is a big one for him. So, Franz Wagner is just, yeah, I don't know where that 25 was going, if he was fit and healthy and playing, and the Orlando Magic are having real, real, real kind of troubles with their offense, and historically have been, and this has just kind of gone to the toilet, but he's just a bit of an afterthought now. You kind of forget about Franz Wagner at all. And the fact that he was, you know, pick 34 is probably early. I think a touch early, maybe I said on my big board. And just then compounded by the fact that he's got hurt, really, really has this huge hole in your team. Desmond Bane, on the other hand, and it was a part early when I'm like, he was invested high in Magic with two of his first five players. Bane was a lot, you know, more reliable, an average of 23. You know, again, it's fine. It's not like super amazing. 23, there's guys around there averaging more, but it's fine. It's not the problem. He's had things. He really had big weeks when he could. And I think when you look at the docket, there's probably a lot of weeks where Desmond Bane was one of his more reliable players. But it's just interesting. I think a guy really likes to win. Huge dickhead vibes from Desmond Bane this year. If you've seen all the things, you got it. I haven't seen anything for like a few months now. But that's, I think, Magic has, and apologies to Princey, they're not in the discourse as much, and you kind of don't hear it because I think they've just been so meh. And we'll see what happens for the end of the season. Obviously, it's not looking good, but there's fingers crossed there. But you had the kind of Desmond Bane throwing the balls at players out of bounds. You even have the flagrant fouls where he's pulling them down from the head when they're going. There was a span of like 2 or 3 weeks where he had one consistently every few games of a highlight that you see or a dirty play. So that's out there now, I think, for Desmond. He's always been this competitive dickhead vibe, but I guess when we're talking like Desmond Bane fantasy, he's been a super reliable, interesting guy that you're going to take around kind of 5 to 8 now. And it depends on where you're feeling. But, you know, we've seen his, projections or kind of value be as high as kind of, I think it was like a late round 3, early round 4. And now kind of even with the hype of going to a new team, where they're going to sit. So I think, you know, round 5 is on the upper end of where you're taking him. But I think, you know, moving forward, Desmond Bane, I think, is a reliable guy, and we've seen that. And I think there's something to this, knowing when guys get traded for, and if you give up a lot for them, that, you know, the franchise and the team and the ownership kind of value it to a point where they're going to trust the role and, like, put you in, and there's a high floor to it, because, you know, they don't want to be seen as being wrong on kind of an investment there. And that's where, you know, you see things like a Rudy Gobert or even to a Mikal Bridges, who people are starting to call now that, you know, should be coming off the bench. But they're not going to do that because they traded 5 first round picks for him. They're selling this kind of concept. Rudy Gobert is his whole defense. Even if it comes to playoffs and things kind of change, like regular season, you know, if things, you know, happen in a minute rotation one game, it's not really coming into the next, I think. Like, he's a part of the picture. Desmond Bane's come to try to fix the offense. He's a guy that I think if you own him, you'd really kind of like the dog in him a little bit. But outside, he feels like a guy to easy hate. But I think, you know, you'd want a little bit more for a round 5 guy sometimes. But it's fine. It kind of lands where it is. And again, I think, you know, next year he goes in that 5 to 8 round. And he's not going to be the problem moving forward. But next pick, Jamal Murray. So he's kind of down as the big one here. So absolute kind of rock star stuff for Jamal Murray. He's been one always, and I've said it on the podcast consistently, that he's a better player than fantasy player. And that has been true, I think, for several seasons previous. Last season was a weird one where he started really slow. He was coming off, I think, the Olympics, where it was just an absolute train crash. You know, he had this huge extension, and there's a lot of, you know, talk about, oh, it's a lot of money for a guy, you know, he just hasn't played that well. Denver have had their issues this season, inconsistency and things like that. Jamal Murray's been an absolute hero. I mean, the thing that allured me to him early in his career, and, you know, he was the rising star kind of versus rookies versus sophomore MVP on his year, I think as a sophomore, when he kind of showed. And I remember All-Star games are meaningless and less so now, potentially. But I could see, you know, the things there and go, oh, this scoring is like a real thing. You know, drafted him a couple of years in a row, really liked it. You know, it came to the front. Obviously, Denver went on to win a championship, you know, a couple of years ago. It was all this really kind of strong value. But it's only been this year where you've hit like this career mark from points. So, you know, he's averaging 25 points a game. The assists have always been something that hasn't really been something to point at with a fantasy value for Jamal, because obviously they go through Jokic a lot in their system. But you'd still think that Jamal Murray could average, you know, a little more than 5 assists a game, and it's kind of sat there for a while. So 7.2 this year, but I mean, you know, the percentages I think are really kind of healthy without having them right in front of me. But, you know, I think what I do have in front of me is in terms of where he sits in average and stuff for our league. So he's 16th in average overall, and he's, I think, with 29.6, you know, just hitting that kind of 30 mark. So I think there's like 12, 13 guys who have 30 in the season, and that's, you know, your elite kind of bracket that you want to be in. He's just off that bracket this season, but even more interesting enough, you know, when you look at total points, he's 6th. So he's 6th in the league in total points. He's just above Tyrese Maxey, who just missed some time now. But, you know, Tyrese Maxey was that kind of person I was pointing to, you know, outside of, you know, that top kind of Jokic, you know, Wemby, SGA kind of guys who got picked in the first five of, like, these guys are putting up, you know, the next amount of points and stuff. And he's put himself into that bracket, you know, over the last kind of 4 to 5 weeks, climbing over guys by, you know, being such a consistent, you know, player. He had a 53-point game 3 games ago, 52.25 in fantasy, and he's just doing it a lot more consistently and relying on not just the points. Even his last 3 games, 6 rebounds in each of them. He's averaging 4.4 rebounds for the season. Like, that's, you know, up on games where he wouldn't kind of rebound the ball as much as he was now. So huge, huge one for Jamal Murray, which is going to be his best pick by far. Dyson Daniels. So there's a couple of picks that are really interesting, and I don't do it for everyone, but I wanted to look at a couple of the stats for Dyson Daniels, and it kind of ticked my interest because, A, you know, he's been a weird one to own. He really struggled in the first few weeks coming off his last season, which was kind of his breakout of, I'm not just, you know, this role player in defense, you know, I'm a real part of a winning, potentially starting five. You know, there was all the stuff around how Pelicans got fleeced in the trade. It feels like Atlanta are on the good end of a few trades with Pelicans, potentially. You know, Derek Queen's went good, so we'll see where that goes. But, you know, Dyson Daniels is this real player. Chris drafted him in the last round last season, and he was a huge part of his kind of run all the way to the tipping point at the championship round. And then this season he gets drafted at pick 67. And you're like, okay, is he going to back it up? He averages 22.3. His average in terms of where he ranks is 66 in air play. So, you know, right around the mark where he's been drafted, which makes me feel, you know, it's a great pick here. It's returned. He's 37 in total points. So very much kind of outperforming. But it's just interesting because, yeah, he's been up and down, and there's talk about his shot in particular. So he's shooting 17%. So 18 on 103 attempts from 3 points. So that ranks historically, and because I saw a thing pop up as like one of the worst seasons ever for someone who's shooting over 100 threes in a season. And it's bottomed out in a way that's a bit, he was never like a reliable 3-point shooter, but he shot 34% last year. He shot 30% before, you know, season before that. And it's kind of just kind of fallen off a cliff and doesn't feel confident with it all. But he's finishing 57% at the rim and 2-point field goal. So it'd be higher at the rim. It's 70% or 57% overall from 2-point. So that's where he's kind of picking up the slap. And even though the steals are down, they're still at 1.9 compared to 3 last year. 3 is an insane number. 1.9, super healthy. He's doing all the little bits enough. You know, he's playing high minutes. He's consistently had patches this year that have really been healthy enough that it's like, okay, well, you know, he's a guy. He's going to be a guy, but that 3-point thing's just, you know, a little bit scary. At least for fantasy, you can be like, well, put it away. I don't want you really shooting it as much. I think Atlanta would be like, well, actually, we need you to spread the floor a bit. But, you know, if Okongwu and Jalen Johnson are shooting better, maybe he doesn't really need to as much, and he can be more of a guy that is just, you know, havoc on defense, running, cutting lanes, you know, the end of like a real hockey assist kind of stuff where it ends with him with a really, you know, clean layup or a look at the basket for him to finish there. So it's just been interesting to kind of watch the journey with Dyson Daniels. And funny enough, like after all the ups and downs, he's at the moment 66th in average, after getting drafted 67. But yeah, he's been playing, so total points make it look like a real healthy pick. Not healthy pick has been Jakob Poeltl, who, you know, his average 19.9 makes it feel like not that much of a bad pick. It's still, you know, lower than what you'd want. And I think on draft day, I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fine. I see the role. I don't see really any threat to it. You know, the threat ends up being Colin Murray-Boyles, but he doesn't leapfrog him, you know, as much as because, Jakob wasn't playing well is because he just was hurt. He was injured. You know, you just didn't really get a look at it. But even when he's come back, it's just like, I don't know where he fits in the plans. Feels weird because he's got this long-term contract now, which was some of the reason why you're like, I'm fine to take him, you know, around pick 74 because, you know, they just gave him a whole bunch of money. He's part of what they're doing. You look at the Toronto list and they've probably outperformed expectations and you know, finished fifth or sixth and play playoffs. But, you know, when you looked at it, like, well, I think your issues are your depth. You're starting five, I think, are pretty rock solid with. RJ Barrett goes the pick after. So, you know, two of these guys you envision to be in a starting role for the Raptors. But, you know, RJ Barrett averages two more and it's just playing a lot more. Jakob Poeltl is just kind of not there and I don't know where it goes. They're kind of locked into him. I'm not sure if you find the trade, but, you know, Colin Murray-Boyles, I think, is really the heir apparent and someone they will invest more. So we'll see where it goes. Again, like, it just, it's not awful drafting, but you see these kind of go either way. Jakob Poeltl, I think the year before was an awesome pick at round like 12 or some shit. Like, and it's just, some of it's just the year to year things. I mean, I wouldn't feel amazing after draft going, oh, Jakob Poeltl round 8, here we go. But I remember looking at his stats and looking at his games played and all the stuff. Like, yeah, like, this isn't going to be a problem. But it was, which, you know, is why, you know, there's some of the issues. I think Christian Brown at pick 86, 87 here. I mean, I got it kind of that you were like, he had a really good season from an undrafted fantasy perspective to average about 20. You're like, oh, well, he's a drafted guy now. Where do you take him? I remember being like, oh, well, Cameron Johnson coming in. What's the kind of look there? But you're like, well, Michael Porter Jr. is coming out. There's more opportunity. I think it was a fine kind of lane for Walshy to kind of be in and kind of putting an expectation of him. I think it's maybe in hindsight, you go, well, his game and what you were seeing, where were you looking for that kind of improvement to kind of pick him here? Because it hasn't happened. Again, injury was some of it, but I don't think we blame that with Christian Brown overall because he's played enough that his average of 16.3 makes me feel, you know, like, obviously we overrated or Walshy overrated him here. But again, I don't mind teams having swings on guys like a Christian Brown or young guys who had, you know, a leap and you're expecting them to kind of continue from that. Like, this is where I think you make your money on some of those picks and it hasn't worked out this time. But I think it's a hard one to crucify on. I really, really liked the Isaiah Hartenstein pick at the time. I think injuries hurt that one. I think, again, it's probably you can't blame injury for everything, but he's just been in and out. It's been interrupted. The real look of what they were, I think, last season with Isaiah Hartenstein made me feel that people underrated what he was going to do. He's averaging a 21.7, which, you know, is healthy and works for around 10 play you've picked at 94. So I think that's not the problem too much, but I think where my head was at, I was like, oh, I reckon he can be like a 23-24 guy for large stints of the season. Just hasn't happened, and I think he kind of was stuck on the IR for a while and came back, and then, you know, it really hasn't had like much of a healthy run as much as other players, obviously. So I think it kind of hurt him all season, even though I felt fine with the pick. And the Kuminga one was similar. And I think at the time, 2 weeks into the season, when it looked all right, I wasn't taking a victory lap, but I think I mentioned on one of the points, I was like, yeah, like, this is looking like okay. And then it's probably a mistake because it was the Kuminga kind of roundabout. Like, we've seen this before. It's been the thing. Some of it has been his unwillingness to, I think, buy into some of the role and some of the coaching staff's unwillingness to kind of be flexible around highlighting what Jonathan Kuminga does well. Some of it's just like the pieces they have and the system they run. And some of it's just like a Kuminga effort, but then really unfortunate timing for injuries that, you know, if he hurts and misses fewer games and by the time he's back there, they're playing other guys in the spots and is doing, you know, well enough that Steve Kerr just, you know, refuses to go away with that. There was a stubbornness to the whole contract situation of like, well, we're not letting you go for free. There's no other huge contract kind of out there. The only big contract you can get is for a sign and trade, and no teams are giving up, you know, what we want for you. So suck it up and like, let's go here, and kind of force his hand to a 2-year kind of team option deal, which is, you know, I think it's like $20 million or something. Like, it was enough money, but just like, it was not enough for the coach. Like, well, we don't give a shit about that anymore. Like, you're on our terms. He couldn't get traded anyway, I think, with the extension stuff until right and before the deadline. And that finally happens, and you kind of see this like unleashed Jonathan Kuminga on very, very small sample size before he kind of gets hurt again. And he hasn't been great, I think, in some of the last 6 or 7 games. But the issue, and I said at the start, is like, once he's not in the rotation and he's getting zeros and you can't put him on the IR and you already have like 5 guys got to kind of hurt, there was just like a period of like 4 weeks that were just like complete write-offs. And I know that was the kind of the frustration at the end of the season by Adam, and warranted. And it's not a frustration at anyone in particular. It's just kind of bad luck. It's like, people had buys against this team that just like wasn't fit, wasn't kind of rocking up. And they finally get fit in the time that, and Princey is another one for this, who lost out in finals because of it. But Princey and Adam get this team and like all barrels blazing, where other teams just got a buy. And that's the luck of the draw with some of the stuff. But it's an interesting kind of way we've gone. But Kuminga's, even though I think the draft process was fine and interesting and you get it, you need to cut cord. You needed to cut the cord. You can't be at the end of the season as well, oh, I'm like this, look at him now. Like, we needed to keep on to him when he was like one of the main reasons why the car's just kind of smashing into the wall consistently and not getting results. So equal level of blame, I think, there for that one. I think Daniel Gavin next is just like, he is what he is now. Yeah, it's probably not sexy. I'd go somewhere else, but he gave you fine amount of points, I guess. And then the round off, Bobby Portis, he wasn't as good as you were hoping for. Milwaukee was just an absolute train wreck. You completely forget this guy's even a part of their team, which is not a good sign. Jaden McDaniels, with Murray as his best kind of 2 picks, you know, he really kind of came out and evolved in his shell with more facets on his offense. And I know previous seasons we'd see games where you go, you know, 26, 27, but then like 5, and then like a 30, but then like a 10 and a 12. Like, this year was a lot more consistent. He still has a tendency to kind of yo-yo depending on things and how he's going. But a 19.2 average is low compared to, I think it was like a 22, 23 in the first like couple months of the season. Really kind of value for someone, you get 134. And then Tyus Jones is kind of a throwaway pick at the end that we don't need too much to talk about. But I think, yeah, overall, the injuries to kind of Trey and Franz and Poeltl to a lesser extent kind of derail it all. I think Jaden McDaniels and Murray, as I said, are his 2 best picks. His worst pick is probably Poeltl. But the other one is Christian Brown, I think. Just you're missing on that. It's a hard one. And the surprise has to be Murray, I think. Just clearly him being just that good. Like, I don't know where he kind of goes next season and getting drafted, because I'd be still a little bit worried of taking him, you know, in a late round 2. But that's what his average is putting at him at, that's where he, you know, he should get drafted. So I wonder if someone, you know, wants to go with him, you know, early round 3 or something, and hope that he gets back, and we'll see where it goes. But for this season, I think he's just absolutely nailed that. And the Dyson Daniels one, for the reasons I said, is really interesting to talk about. But again, this season, no trades. I don't know if he has ever traded, at least for Jesse. I know there's been a couple. Sound off if it is. I don't know. It'd be interesting, and this would take too long. to map out our teams and how many trades and how many trades you think they'd won. And I think I did two this season, and both of them, one was a huge zero and one was maybe a loss just, but we'll see. So I think I'm probably a 50-50 kind of hit rate, but Walshy, I don't know if he has stats at all, because can't remember him making one. Free agency worth of note, Andre Drummond, November 17, he picked them up. If you picked someone up in November 17, that means it's early, early days. Andre Drummond's not someone that should have stuck on the roster, especially when you're having trouble elsewhere, that he's kind of your guy that you've identified to plug the holes. I get that with the Embiid in and out, but Embiid, it was only till late in the season he had these huge stretches out, so that means you were riding Drummond with a extra. He was going to maybe get some minutes some one game, maybe not. You know, I think his average was around 14.8. Just not someone that should be rosterable, and that's not even factoring games where he just didn't come off the bench. So that's a real head-scratcher one for me. I think the reverse of where he kind of nailed a free agency was Guy Santos on Golden State. He kind of plugged him in just when he was having this rise, and it was good timing, I think. A guy who started to get really consistent minutes and do a lot with a little. That kind of came through him scoring very well for him. So free agency, again, I think lacked. He only used 11 of his 25, but the budget was a big thing. He only spent $85. So, you know, I don't think you need to be spending your money. It's like, but it's obviously you had opportunity to do a little bit more if you've got that much left. But yeah, where the season went right, I think the Şengün pick just worked. I think that was a huge point in my like draft review of the team. I was like, well, actually, I'm worried about Şengün. I like a lot of these other picks at the time. I reckon, you know, it could be good, but Şengün this early, you know, if he's not a top 20 pick, then it's going to kind of hurt. But no, he was like 13 on average or whatever I said. Really kind of fine. No, not a problem. And he's where it went wrong, as I said, was kind of, I think, the injuries, Brown not kind of paying off, and Kuminga not even being able to put on the IR as he got zeros. Just hurts too much. But the key moment for the season was the last 2 weeks for Walshy, clawing up out of the keg. It would have been two kegs in three seasons, and that's on the back of winning the title. So he's had three lean seasons kind of after going all the way. So I think it was such an effort to kind of get there that life and everything in the wake is just like, I did it. My name's on the trophy. I know you could blame being a bit loose on the next draft after that, but yeah, this one, I think the team was fine, but he wasn't proactive enough to kind of change things. So that's the focus of next season, is that when things are going bad, it's, you know, being on the front foot a little bit. And the other focus is to change the name. I mean, say what you will, but I think not changing the name is the bad juju everyone else has, and Chet happens. I mean, it's not a slam dunk name, not enough to keep it through. Yeah, that's all I was going to say. But that's it for the first two. Watch some basketball. We're getting nearly into playoffs, obviously. I think this is the second last week of the regular season, and most teams have about seven games left, I think. So we're really getting to the end. I'll probably maybe do one more of these before I probably do a end of season wrap up championship kind of review of how that went down, like I've done the past, you know, few years. But kicking off the reviews to keep you in touch if you've kind of drifted out of what's going on in fantasy basketball. So bring you back in, come in. Here's a couple of teams, here's some thoughts, and get back locked in, because the championship matchup review, end of season result, all that kind of bullshit will be coming up very soon as well. So thanks all. Here's an hour of fantasy basketball to tick off, and we'll catch you all next time. Thank you very much, everyone.